Chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and I have spent the last 24 years as both the CEO of Technology Partners and as the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. On today's show, we welcome Gary Vondahar. Gary is an executive vice president at MasterCard. Gary, I am so delighted to have you with me today. You and I have known each other for several years now, both through MasterCard and Technology Partners being a partner at MasterCard, and then through another organization that I know that you're going to talk about a little bit later. Thank you for making the time.
Well, it's great to be here, Lisa. I just feel like this is a continuing conversation that we have, so it's quite easy to sit here and talk and share some of my stories.
Well, great. Well, I want to jump in. Tell us a little bit about growing up, if you would.
So I grew up with a family of engineers, if you can believe it, but needed to tinker, needed to mess with things, almost as a survival tactic. If you wanted to ride a bike, you fixed it. If you wanted to have a car that ran, you had to figure out how to fix your car, and it was really hands-on. It's just hands-on. At the same time, wonderful intersection with the time personal computers came out. And I had parents that allowed me to tinker with this new electronic, you know, just like you would with a mechanical part. And I just fell in love with it. I fell in love with the tinkering of it. Ended up going to electrical engineering and getting that degree. Found myself, though, wanting to quickly get out of school and go back to tinkering, go back to application, applying the technology rather than the theory. Mm-hmm. Wasn't a lab guy. I was a guy who wanted to use that technology.
Do it, right.
And so when I left school, my main goal was to find something I could continue to do my tinkering with a degree with somebody, you know, where somebody would pay me to do that.
Yes, that's always a good thing. So when you started tinkering with the computer and that, how old were you? Were you in high school
or was it even younger? I was 13. I did an online course, believe it or not, an online course. It was through a television station, like on PBS, one of these stations for
what is
a computer, motherboard, you know, and CPU and the access panel, you know, and just there's no information out there. It's funny, as much information as there is today, there is no information on what all of this actually was. And unless you were tinkering in some garage on the West Coast, you didn't find yourself with very much access. And I was here in St. Louis trying to get that information. So started that way. But really, the only way to learn it was to dive right in.
To do it. Yeah. Wow. And I just think, what great parents.
I know. I think about that raising my own kids. Like, am I allowing them to tinker enough to really experiment with the things that they take for granted?
Right.
And I want them to do that. And it certainly is a different world now than before.
But that, I think that's great advice for parents, though. You know, really observe your children and see what their interests are and then open up that world to them. So let's talk about, and you've kind of already touched on that, but I mean, you went into technology and it was just because of kind of how you grew up, right? And that you just loved it.
And people ask me, what do I want to be like back then? What do I want to be when I grow up?
Yes.
Like, I don't know. I just want to keep doing the things that I like to do. I still don't know what I want to be when I grow up. You know, that's the, the lingering question for the last, 30 years of my career. And that really does answer the question. The question doesn't get answered. I want to continue to leverage, to lean in, to drive towards the technology that's going to really be changing the future. And that is an awesome proposition. And even at some stage, still frightening, just like you were approaching your first job, given how technology is disrupting these days.
Right. Yes. And that is the one constant in technology, is that it's going to change, right? But you and I, that kind of brings up another thought to me. You and I have talked about this a lot, having a growth mindset, and continuing to learn and improve. We never really reach a summit, do we? Gary?
I don't think we do. No. But you can reach a perceived summit if you top out based on the environment that you're in, right? Mm-hmm. Based on the culture that you're in. So there is an aspect of feeling like you've topped out if you aren't given the headroom. And that's one of the hardest things as a leader to instill in your teams, this idea that there's the continual next summit and the next things you need to target and that you're never done with it.
Right. I love that. We could probably do a whole podcast on that alone. So talk to us about the something extra in your career path that really led you into your current position with MetroCard.
Right. Well, it starts with this conversation about sort of never being done learning. I love the technology disruption. I threw myself at technology consulting and did technology consulting with Accenture. And I like to say before that, you know, Anderson Consulting, before that, the management information division of Arthur Anderson, you know, so sort of weaned myself into technology and did that for close to 14 years, always going where the opportunity was. Mm-hmm. I was just incessant about, yes, work-life balance. And yes, it can only work if you make it work for your whole person and you learn to do that. But mm-hmm. I was always going where the next technology disruption was, where the next opportunity was, working with some great clients and really driving into that disruption. And it became my mantra to do that. What I really found myself wanting to do after 2001, technology sort of simmers, right? You've had the hype curve, you've had the bust. Now things are picking up again. What I found myself doing in consulting was not getting a lot of action. It was perhaps my role, but more what's happening in the industry is there was a pause, right? Mm-hmm. And so there wasn't a whole lot of action. It was a scary time to say, okay, where's this technology going to go and how is it going to disrupt? And a lot of clients weren't proactive with that, right? They weren't leaning into that.
Sure.
So I took the opportunity to go to MasterCard, which is where I've been now for the last 18 years, still playing in this disruptive technology field. And one of the main things I did, I call it shift left. I call it shift your career when you're a technologist into something that's more in front of where you've been, right? If you mm-hmm. were a technology consultant, you're brought in to solve a problem. You don't own the problem. You don't own the strategy. All those things in my visual head are left, right? Are ahead of it. So you're in a position, I wanted to be in a position where I was going to make more decisions mm-hmm. and find a company that allowed me to do that. And I thought it would be a 2 to 3 year thing. I'll just crack this nut.
Yes.
As soon as I get bored, I'll go do something else again. And I've been there 18 years. I like to say it's my ninth 2 year assignment. The evolution of the work that I do there is such an amazing company, such an amazing environment. And this idea of shift left, I've carried through to my teams, which is to move yourself away from being an order taker, move yourself away from that tail end where IT is a cost center. IT is not that anymore. It can be a disruptive business strategic partner if you approach it the right way and have the right skills to do that. So it takes this combination of technology skills, leadership, and being proactive to shift left.
Right. And I think that's just a testament to MasterCard. Because MasterCard has allowed you to do that, right? And what, a couple of years ago, maybe even longer than that, Gary, I remember MasterCard saying, we are a technology company. That is how you guys identify yourself
right now.
Right,
and if you think about that statement, it shouldn't need to be made, right? If you are, then people know it, right? And so it's funny to say it, right? And we do have that debate, like, do you have to tell someone you're a technology company? But we're a technology company that happens to be in the business of payments. We're in artificial intelligence and machine learning and securing the payments worldwide, mm-hmm. running financial ecosystems, right, which the world relies on, which is a daunting thing amidst all this technology disruption to actually run the networks that support mm-hmm. that. And so it creates its own challenges when you're talking about technology disruption on top of the financial renaissance or a continuing move for the rest of the world. So it mm-hmm. continues to be a fascinating place to build a technology career.
Yeah, very good. So for our listening audience that may not know, how many countries are you in now? I know you've got...
We're in 210 countries.
210 countries.
You know, technology that spans the globe and every continent, right? So all seven. And connection points that manage the technology network that connects financial institutions as well as government institutions. Now it's expanding our reach in terms of what our network does. It's running the network that sits behind you as a consumer in a mm-hmm. storefront, inserting your chip card are using your mobile phone, and that process of you being able to walk out of the store with whatever you walked out of, with only that plus your credentials, mm-hmm. right, your identity, mm-hmm. and have all the money move in the background. So the money for the merchant, the money for the acquiring bank that the merchant belongs to, the consumer who has their card issued through a certain bank, the money that moves at the end of the day, all of the logic that goes into that, as well as the security, the privacy, everything mm-hmm. else. That network is what we run
what
as MasterCard.
Do. Yeah. Yeah. But to the consumer, they don't see all of that in the background.
They don't,
but
no,
that's
no
the magic
right.
that and you MasterCard, guys make happen.
MasterCard has a huge advantage of having a wonderful franchise that is global, that is in 210 countries, and a great brand, a global mm-hmm. brand.
Absolutely.
And so as we look to be that technology company, it's what else do we do in the world where we look for a world beyond cash?
Mm-hmm.
Cash is still the biggest competitor we have.
Mm-hmm.
Electronic payments are dwarfed by cash and checks. It's 85-15 still in the world, which
is
no
it?
One expects.
Wow.
But the
yeah.
actual still movement required for the world to move towards electronic payments creates a huge, you know, on-ramp for
mm-hmm.
and opportunities for technologists.
Well, and that kind of is a great segue into our next question. So what do you think, you know, is the next big technological revolution that we are seeing on the horizon
yeah,
right
it's
now?
It's definitely everything interconnected. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the connected car. It's the connected mobile devices. It's interesting to see because I don't go to 210 countries for my teams, but I go a lot of places in the world and spend a lot of time on the road. You see connected communities. You see communities that you would consider impoverished or third world that are just coming into financial inclusion, just coming into an economy where they can exchange value based on some basic prepaid function or some basic store
mm-hmm.
value, some basic even like mercy aid for places that need aid, just coming into where it's the next billion consumers, the next billion people that can be included in a financial ecosystem, you see the connected devices. You
mm-hmm.
see the interconnection. And now certainly you see it in the U.S. It's prevalent. It's called the Internet of Things. And, you know,
yes.
and that really underplays the real immense opportunity there, which is everything connected to everything else.
Mm-hmm.
Then if you think about it, that might be an interesting proposition. But now you need to manage data. Manage the privacy, manage the security. We start with everything from a security mindset and say, how do you look at this where all sides are, where value is exchanged? There's no middlemen in there. They get in between your handshake, right? That's a huge proposition today in this grand scheme of Internet of Things. So
mm-hmm.
we're always looking at it from the security investment, the mindset that a technologist needs now has to always include that.
Mm-hmm. You've had 9 2-year assignments at MasterCard. And wasn't there a time, Gary, where you were one of the evaluators of potential new technologies, new companies out there that MasterCard might want to acquire? Wasn't there a time where you were doing that?
Good memory, because that we had a discussion years ago. And,
what
I found in my career is I moved from one new technology and creating new businesses for about the first 10 years at MasterCard
mm-hmm.
and then had enough experience with the digital disruption to become the CTO for enterprise architecture,
mm-hmm.
which also had the wonderful opportunity to look at mergers and acquisitions, primarily acquisitions, right? And
yes.
for MasterCard. And we were just starting. We're a 50-plus-year-old company just starting to look at acquisitions at that time. It's a wonderful process of learning and learning
yes.
while you're actually in the middle of playing the game. And I sought a whole lot of advice from different Fortune 100 companies and in terms of how do you run
how
your
do you
corporate
do this?
M&A and
sure.
include technology, you know, where you have a balanced due diligence. And so my role was around just one piece of it, which was the technology due diligence piece, but just the ability to look at how payments was going to change from a perspective of just how technology was changing,
mm-hmm.
right? So
mm-hmm.
you look at different capabilities that existed around the world and how do we expand what we do beyond payments? If you think of beyond payments, might be a total view of commerce and how we look at commerce. We now have extended our acquisitions beyond retail payments, which is credit card payments or debit, into Clearinghouse, ACH Clearinghouse, which is account-to-account payment flows,
mm-hmm.
which is a whole different set of payment flows. So when you really step back and you have the opportunity to look at technology, you can say payment flows are going to change. Think about government to people, right, which might be social services. Think about healthcare to insurance companies to people as a payment flow. Think about credit or account to account. Think about your automatic direct deposit for your salary. That's a payment flow.
Mm-hmm.
And you think about the technology that sits behind it and how you secure it, how you manage it, how you look at it globally. those are the big opportunities that I suddenly was open to, right? So it gave me such an interesting perspective on where we were headed as an industry. And then I moved into a different role where I was more in the businesses that flank what I would call our core MasterCard network. It's on the flank. I call it the flanks, the right and the left flank, the acceptance side, which you would think of as merchants, as businesses that accept some form of payments, mm-hmm. a lot more online now, a lot more digital yes. than retail card present in a store. And then the other side is the bank systems that process down to issuing of cards. And so I sit on the outside, and a lot of my capabilities came up through these acquisitions that I had the opportunity 8 or 10 years ago to look through. So it really has just given me an opportunity to see things end to end, not just from the acquisition perspective. There's no such thing as throwing it over the wall because now I'm on the other side of the wall and I'm catching it. And so it gives you an interesting perspective on how to manage technology.
Yeah. No, I just find that so fascinating, and it makes total sense to me because there's a lot of innovation going on out there. And so, you know, to bring those new capabilities in the organization, you don't always have to build it yourself. You can go look for it when you get to the point that MasterCard was.
And really that's as much a function of expertise and recognizing what you can do and what you can as speed, right? Mm-hmm. Which is how long will it take for you to get to market with something, even if you think you can do it. And this combination, you know, acquisitions work. They don't have their own just a happy path either, right? Mm-hmm. There's a culture difference. There's a geographic distance. There's an integration that's required, right? Which is a massive amount of work. But the positive side of getting new capabilities, of lifting, you know, the entire rest of the organization. We don't just take organizations we acquire and push sort of MasterCard goodness to them. It's a two-way street, right? So we bring the value back into the rest of MasterCard for a lot of the companies we acquire.
Very good. Well, we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back with Gary Vonderhaar. Let's face it, the future is mobile. There's a good chance that you are listening to this show right now on your phone. Have you explored how you can move your business mobile too? Our mobile apps team at Technology Partners makes it their mission to move our clients into the hands of their employees and customers and change their business processes to meet the demands of their users. Let's work together and build a dynamic mobile app for your team. Go to tpi.co/mobile apps and get the conversation started about how we can help you get your new application off the ground. So, Gary, I just have to ask you, you have a MasterCard branded shirt on today. And there's about 20 characters underneath the MasterCard logo. And I said, what is that? What does that mean?
Right. Yeah. So I perfect that? Question, because the intent is to ask a question. It's hexadecimal and it's the hexadecimal translation for a phrase we use, which is next is now. And so two parts to this. One is the whole idea is technology is everywhere and technologists are everywhere. And even within our own company where we have this as much on the sales teams and commercial teams as we do in the product teams, there still has to be more conversations about technology. Mm-hmm. And then it's a reminder and it's a conversation starter really from that perspective. Right. Like, let's talk more about technology. You have to kind of continue that conversation. That's for our own leaders that we repeat. The next is now is really critical because we always talk strategy, future, what's the next technology. Next is now, right? We are acting now. We are doing now. We aren't just thinking. We aren't just, it's a motion. It's the motion of acting now and being deliberate with creating that future. Mm-hmm. So that next is now statement, that's a translation, lends itself to other wonderful conversations of how technology, using the shift left mindset that I thought about, if you as a technologist aren't, you need to talk at the strategic table about what technology can disrupt and do next. What is it capable of doing that maybe you haven't had the mindset of technology as your core and it's treated as a cost center, but there's opportunities to say, you know, no matter how you want to look at it, technology is going to disrupt your business, every single business, and it is today.
Disrupt or be disrupted.
So have that
right?
conversation, own that conversation as technologists. Don't wait to be an order taker. Don't wait to be somebody that becomes like the equivalent of the short order cook, right? That just takes it and delivers in a one-off transaction. Be involved in the conversation.
Very good. Well, thank you for explaining that. So this is something extra. And what I'd love for you to do is tell us a story where something extra was missing in you.
Yeah, I have, back to the opportunity, it made me think about it when you talked about my opportunity to look at M&A and be the CTO of architecture. I had good momentum in my career as a technologist, had done a lot of emerging technology, suddenly found myself sitting in what I would say is the, you know, the C-suite of conversations in an operating committee. And it was a recurring set of meetings in awe of this. I'm still in awe of MasterCard, in awe of our leaders, you know, and with all due respect, you know, sitting in these meetings. And after several of them, my boss, who was very clear and direct with his feedback to me in a very respectful way, which was awesome, right, said, you just aren't showing up at these meetings. Why didn't you show up? He knows I'm in the meetings. He knows I have an opinion. I have plenty to say and plenty to talk about. And in these meetings, I wasn't showing up. So number one point is having a good manager that can be your coach, that can point out things is key to this and key to a technologist working better. Mm-hmm. What I found myself doing, though, and I did reflect on it because it wasn't something that I just did harumph and, you know, I'm not doing, you know, and I accepted it. And in doing it, had a major reflection, which is I was having meetings in my own head. I was having the conversation. I was having the action items. I was having the feedback. I was creating the arguments and the debate and doing all of that. But I wasn't active in the meeting. I wasn't doing that. And my role was to do that actively in the meeting. Mm-hmm. So I found myself having to really shift my own thinking to how do I be present and actively participate? And by the way, for me, that took the confidence to expose myself to what I might say that might not be quite well thought out or well, you know, well constructed. It's something that as soon as words come out of your mouth, the thoughts might be jumbled. It's out there, right?
Yes.
So it really taught me to shift into that kind of conversation mode where it's okay to have the conversation.
It's okay
to start the conversation.
Yes.
You know, you can then create techniques for that by starting by if you don't want to propose the answer, ask a question, right? And so you come up with techniques for engaging, which really does then tend to help the conversation. Mm-hmm. And that was just early in my career. And again, I sit here as an engineer and sit here as a solution guy and a fix-it guy and have, you know, like to think that I have a lot of tools in the toolbox and answers. But that one piece, as you move up in your career as a technologist, the ability to A, get good coaching, B, know what you want to do next, and then be comfortable with shifting into this active participant, not just sit at the back and be, you know, attending there is really key.
So much is packed in there, Gary. You know, getting comfortable with the uncomfortable, because sometimes it is a little scary to speak up because it's like, what if I say something and it's not on point or, like you said, jumbled, not well thought out? But being comfortable with that, it's okay, you know, and you can continue that conversation. And I love what you said about asking a question. So let me ask you this. Was there anything, any books that you read during that time that kind of helped you formulate those thoughts before you went into the meeting?
So I'm a big fan of any of the Stephen Covey books. I mean, I kind of grew up with the principle-centered leadership and any of the trust-building books, and it really does come down to that. I led with this a little bit with what kind of company MasterCard is, but you have to look for a culture, and in fact, if you're a leader, you must create the culture that's this mindset of, I'll call it just decency. It doesn't tend to describe it as a very high bar, but it's an environment where you can trust each other, you can flatten the organization, you can go into any office and have any conversation, you can have it respectfully, you can disagree, you can have an argument, and you can bring that forward. But this environment, it really is, you become a creature of that environment. And if your environment is caustic, and if it's political, and if it's filled with people with their own agendas, you see that pretty quickly. And MasterCard has this nurturing environment that really creates, in fact, it surprises people. It's such an interesting environment that people have to do a pause and say, is this real? Is this something that is the way the world will work?
Really the way that it is.
And trust me, there's plenty of places where we're having high, intense, passionate disagreements in the way we move the business, but it's in a context and a culture that really promotes that and asks for that, I'll say, that noise to come up, that volume to raise a little bit so that you do move the right direction quick enough.
Wow, that's wonderful. Well, there may be some technologists out there that are hearing this and are thinking in their mind, that's the kind of culture, you know, and I know MasterCard's always looking for great people. So what do you believe, Gary, is the something extra that every leader needs?
Yeah, in fact, I just hinted at it around this noise level. I like to draw out analogies. And, and while the term silence is golden is an interesting option, as a technologist, it's not an option. And the right level of noise is good. And so I having raised kids, I don't have one-year-olds anymore, but if anyone that's had a one-year-old in their house, you know that silence is not good, right? Mm-hmm. If they're in the other room and they're clinking and clattering and a little bit's going on, a little bit of tumbling,
things are okay.
Once it gets quiet, then you know something's up, right? Right. It's sort of similar to what I ask for my leaders to do and my teams to do is have this constant feedback loop and this noise level, right? This let bad news, what you would consider even something that you might not want to expose, let it take the quick, you know, elevator to the top. Let's have a conversation. Let's create that conversation so good leaders will do that in the appropriate way, mm-hmm. right? You don't do that by subverting your own organization hierarchy and going to the right, going up, going around. So then you have to base it off of how your organization functions. But that level of appropriate noise from people that really know what's going on, right? The closest person to technologists are my engineers and maybe my senior engineers, maybe mm-hmm. my junior engineers, maybe somebody that I just hired out of college, right? So I like to promote this idea that anybody should find their voice, right? Anyone in the organization should be able to respectfully create that conversation, mm-hmm. have that voice. You know, I call it noise, but it's really being proactive with speaking up.
That's great, great advice. So is there something extra that you would like to share with the listeners? And you and I have talked about this a little, and I love what you say. So talk about that.
The underlying piece of it, when you think about what you can do yourself, what is in you to do and how you must act, right? Because a lot of other people can do a lot of other things, but what you can do. I really coach people on being authentic. Mm-hmm. And I try to do that just in person. Like if you can't bring your whole self to work, if you can't bring your foibles, your quirks, your humor, your problems and show up so that you're the same person at work that you are outside of work, then you're going to find yourself in a really bad situation because the energy level it takes to sort of put on the fake face,
to be
the mindset. And draining. When I coach people on this, they're really like, well, if I find that I can't be that, then I have to leave the company. No, what you must do is have a conversation with your coach, with your manager, with a mentor, with somebody that says, because companies are changing so rapidly that there's a place for everyone in those companies. And managers don't have ESP. They aren't mind readers. Mm-hmm. And so the conversation, it's what's required here. Mm-hmm. And that's another thing that you have to be comfortable with doing. You have to be comfortable with that one-on-one conversation where you can discuss these types of things, right? But if you find yourself not being able to bring your whole self to work and be authentic, I do more coaching around that than anything to get people into a place where they can begin to talk, write down what their career development mm-hmm. plans are, what they want to do next. And it really helps open up things. You have to have a culture of acceptance. We like acceptance. We use the word acceptance in payments as well, right? Which
right.
is, you know, accepted everywhere, you know.
Right.
We like acceptance as kind of the frame for that and how we look at everybody being able to contribute.
Wow. Well, there's a lot packed in there too, but we don't have the time to unpack all of that. But I love that. So I want to give you the opportunity, Gary. Is there something that you want to talk to the listeners about that they may not know about that you're involved in, something that may be is a passion area for you outside
sure.
of MasterCard.
So I have a passion around this, getting to as many people as I can with coaching, with mentorship, with doing this. And I'm on the advisory board, and MasterCard supports this greatly, the Network for Teaching Entrepreneurship. NIFTY is the organization,
mm-hmm.
NFT. And you and I have worked on that together, Lisa. And it's a passion of mine because you can start early. You can start instilling the mindset that people need to address these huge changes in the global economies and financial and fintech and technology and disruption and begin to let people give them tools to have more control over that. So this program is a global program and it's wonderful that MasterCard has teams globally. So we support people in China, in India, in, you know, across the United States and in Europe, everywhere with putting coaches in place, putting mentors in place with high school students
yes.
to teach them this entrepreneurial mindset mm-hmm. and you just see light bulbs come on. I just love the light bulbs coming on moment, you know, and you really, I actually don't have to convince people to keep doing this. I mm-hmm. certainly is, you know, people have to find their passion for where they want to contribute in their philanthropic time. Time is the most valuable piece of that. But once they're hooked on NIFTY and teaching entrepreneurship, you learn as much as you give, but yeah, I find people keep
it's
doing it.
It's fascinating, isn't it?
Yeah,
I remember before you and I were even on that council together, I was asked to be a judge. And I sat there in awe of these high school students and the ideas and the strategy, the roadmaps that they put together. It's amazing. But just giving them that access.
And it really is. There's no book that you have to require to read. They love just hearing how business people think, mm-hmm. how technologists think. And so just access just some of the simple things, just the simple conversation with them and helping them along with their ideas, that type of basic interaction,
you probably get so more than you give.
And by the way, I agree. As a high school student, I would never would have been on stage like these people are on stage.
That would have scared me. Having to do their elevator pitch, and it's just amazing. But we're preparing the leaders of the future, which is really exciting. I know you're passionate about that, and I am too. So, well, Gary, it has been my delight to have you here. It has been just a phenomenal conversation. I'm so excited for our listeners to hear everything that you have shared with us today. So thank you for being here.
Well, thank you, Lisa, and I appreciate the opportunity. And I think you having this forum for this podcast is a great thing. And I know you've had great momentum. Momentum's still building, but congratulations on the success of that as well.
Appreciate that. Thanks.
Our show today is executive produced by Brian Muncy. Our technical producer is Daniel Williams. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc., 2019. For show notes or to reach out to Lisa, visit tpi.co/podcast. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you listen.